وَآيَةٌ لَهُمُ الْأَرْضُ الْمَيْتَةُ أَحْيَيْنَاهَا وَأَخْرَجْنَا مِنْهَا حَبًّا فَمِنْهُ يَأْكُلُونَ
Let the dead earth be a sign for them. We gave it life, and produced from it grain whereof they eat. Let In the preceding verses, see verses 1 to 32, the Makkan unbelievers were reproached for their rejecting, opposing, and giving the lie to the Prophet, peace be upon him. The discourse now turns to the main point of contention, indeed what became conflict between the unbelievers and the Prophet, peace be upon him. The contention between the two parties mainly related to the doctrines of monotheism and the afterlife expounded by the Prophet, peace be upon him. In this regard, a set of arguments are over and again marshaled in support of these doctrines. Thereby, people are asked to continue to reflect over these doctrines. Their attention is drawn to natural phenomena. Do they, to wit, the natural phenomena themselves, not clearly confirm the truth expounded by the Prophet, peace be upon him? The dead earth be a sign for them. The sign indicating that monotheism represents the truth, whereas polytheism is utterly baseless.
وَجَعَلْنَا فِيهَا جَنَّاتٍ مِّن نَخِيلٍ وَأَعْنَابٍ وَفَجَّرْنَا فِيهَا مِنَ الْعُيُونَ
We made in it gardens of date palms and vines, and we caused springs to gush forth.
لِيَأْكُلُوا مِن ثَمَرِهِ وَمَا عَمِلَتْهُ أَيْدِيهِمْ أَفَلَا يَشْكُرُونَ
That they might eat of its fruits. It was not their hands that made them. Will they not then give thanks? That they might eat of its fruits. It was not their hands that made them. We have translated this above as, that they might eat of its fruits. It was not their hands that made them. It can, however, be alternatively translated as, so that they may eat of its fruits and whatever their hands make. This latter rendering signifies secondary food products manufactured by people from natural produce. Bread, cooked dishes, jams, pickles, chutney, and innumerable other edibles are its good illustrations.
Will they not then give thanks?
Here, the soil's fertility is presented as an argument in support of the doctrine of the hereafter. It runs like this. Man is sustained day and night by what is produced by land. He is, however, inclined to consider the produce he reaps from the land a matter of ordinary routine. If he reflects, however, he will realize that the sprouting of blooming fields and verdant gardens and the flow of streams, springs, and rivers on earth do not take place automatically. All this is the outcome of immense wisdom, power, and providence. Soil is made of certain lifeless constituents, which in themselves are devoid of the potential for growth. All its constituents are both separately and after all possible combinations intrinsically devoid of organic life. This obviously raises the question, what has made it possible for this lifeless soil to bring forth vegetation? When one studies this issue, one comes to know that some major factors account for it. Had they not already been in existence, vegetation would not have come to be. These factors are as follows. First, certain parts of the land have layers endowed with materials that provide nutrition to plants. These layers are soft, enabling the roots of the plants to draw nourishment from them. Secondly, water was provided to the land in a variety of ways, enabling the assimilation of the nourishing materials by the plant's roots. Thirdly, the air present in the outer atmosphere protects the earth against natural calamities and causes rainfall. Moreover, it also contains the gases that are essential for plant life and its growth. Fourthly, a special nexus has been established between the sun and the earth, ensuring that plants enjoy both a suitable temperature and climate. These four major factors, each of which represents a combination of several sub-factors, were provided in order that plant life might become possible. After providing these suitable factors, plants were created and endowed with the ability to reproduce themselves, providing suitable conditions relating to soil, water, air, and climate were available. Each plant species was granted a seed possessed of the remarkable quality of perpetuating itself along with its distinguishing characteristics. Above all, numberless species of plants were brought into existence and were invested with the ability to fulfill the myriad needs of animals as well as humans for food, medicine, clothing, and countless other items. Anyone who studies this consummate arrangement with an open mind will be impelled to testify that such a marvelous system could not have come into being on its own. No one other than the Lord of the universe could have taken into account these multifarious considerations relating to soil, air, water, and climate, and could have established this astounding correspondence between plants, animals, and human beings. This can in no way be the result of an accident. Also, it evidently signifies that it cannot be the accomplishment of a multiplicity of gods. On the contrary, it represents the achievement of the one true God, who is the sole creator and Lord of earth, wind, water, the sun, plants, animals, and humans. Had they been creatures of several gods, they would not have displayed such immaculate harmony and coordination. Nor could this system continue to function flawlessly without any interruption for millions of years. After adducing this argument in support of God's unity, the Quran poses the question, will they not give thanks? See verse 35. This question suggests by implication that these unbelievers are a bunch of thankless and perfidious folk. God provided them with the wherewithal for their existence, yet they give thanks to others rather than to their bounteous provider. They stoop to prostrating before false gods who created nothing, but they fail to prostrate themselves before God, their creator.
سبحان الذي خلق الأزواج كلها مما تنبت الأرض ومن أنفسهم ومما لا يعلمون.
Holy is He who created all things in pairs, whether it be of what the earth produces and of themselves and of what they do not know. Holy is he
suggests that God is free from every conceivable imperfection, flaw, or weakness. He is also free from having any partner or associate. Generally speaking, the Quran employs such expressions while refuting polytheistic notions. This because every polytheistic notion essentially amounts to ascribing some kind of flaw or imperfection to God. Those who take others as God's associates assume that He is unable on His own to govern the universe that He Himself created, or that He is too weak to dispense with the support of others, or that others are intrinsically so powerful that they interfere in matters relating to God's overlordship, and yet God puts up with their interference. Alternatively, they conceive Him to be like a worldly sovereign with a retinue of favorite courtiers, sycophantish companions, and pet princes and princesses who have some share in several of His powers. In the first place, people could not have subscribed to polytheism had such ignorant notions not been in currency. Accordingly, the Quran repeatedly affirms that God is free from all such flaws, defects, and imperfections that the polytheists ascribe to Him.
Whether it be of what the earth produces, and of themselves, and of what they do not know.
This is yet another argument in support of monotheism. Here too, attention is drawn to some commonplace facts. People observe these facts day in and day out and go about their business without pondering over them. This, despite the fact that these objects are signs that could direct them to the truth. One of these observable things is the division of human beings into males and females, which is a cause of their procreation. A similar division in the animal species also accounts for the continuation of their species. The same kind of gender coupling is operating in plant life. In a sense, the same also holds true for inanimate objects, as they too are comprised of pairs. We know that matter consists of positive and negative electrical charges and that they produce energy. Only an imbecile can attribute these elaborate arrangements to mere accident and coincidence. It is also hard to conceive that several gods would have created numerous pairs and bound them together so perfectly. The fact of this binary division and the resultant birth of new objects unmistakably points to the oneness of the Creator.
وَآيَةٌ لَهُمُ اللَّيْلُ نَسْلَخُ مِنْهُ النَّهَارَ فَإِذَا هُمْ مُظْلِمُونَ.
And the night is another sign for them. We strip the day from it, and they become plunged in darkness. And the night is another sign for them. We strip the day from it, and they become plunged in darkness.
The alternation of day and night is also one of those commonplace phenomena that man constantly observes. He, however, scarcely regards it as worthy of any special attention. Should he, however, consider how day and night follow each other and ponder the wisdom underlying this alternation, it would become evident that this ordinary phenomenon provides luminous proof of the existence and unity of the Almighty and All-Wise Creator. A day cannot phase into night, nor can night phase into day unless their positions vis-à-vis each other remain changing rather than constantly the same. We also know that the regularity found in this alternation of day and night would not have been possible if the sun and the earth were not part of an inexorable system that strictly governs the alternation of day and night. Moreover, the alternation of day and night has an enormous bearing on earth's creatures. This, once again, underscores that it is a wise being who has put this arrangement in place. The distance between the sun and the earth accounts for the existence of animals, plants, humans, and minerals. Moreover, different regions of the earth regularly face the sun and then move away. Without this, life could not have existed on planet Earth. Had the sun been too far from the earth or too close to it, or had one region of the earth always been engulfed by night and the other by day, life as we know it could not have existed. The same would be the case if the alternation between day and night had been too fast or too slow, or had it been erratic, so that suddenly there would be sunshine or suddenly night envelop the earth. Even the shape and structure of non-living entities would have been much different from what it is. If one is not blinded by bias, one can easily perceive the hand of the all-wise God in this natural arrangement. It is evident that it is the one true God who willed the creation of certain kinds of beings on earth and accordingly established a perfect correspondence between the sun and the earth that was needed for life and survival. Someone might not be convinced that God's existence and unity is a rationally convincing proposition. Such a person would do well to think of the other alternative explanations of the phenomenon, such as there being a host of gods behind the order of the universe, or consider if its underlying cause was a set of blind laws of nature that automatically came into being without the involvement of a conscious will. Can such assumptions be regarded as patently more reasonable than the acceptance of the one true God's will and wisdom as being responsible for the order that characterizes the universe? The assertions to the contrary mentioned above are obviously preposterous. This makes one wonder about the wisdom of those for whom the order, wisdom, and purposiveness found in the universe are not enough proof for God's existence. On the other hand, the very same people accept absolutely irrational explanations of universal phenomenon merely on the basis of sheer guess and conjecture, unsupported by any kind of rational proof whatsoever.
وَالشَّمْسُ تَجْرِي لِمُسْتَقَرٍّ لَهَا ذَلِكَ تَقْدِيرُ الْعَزِيزِ الْعَلِيمِ.
The sun is running its course to its appointed place. That is the ordaining of the Almighty, the All-Knowing. The sun is running its course to its appointed place.
This might refer to the place where the sun will ultimately come to a halt, or it might refer to the time when it will come to a halt. One can only grasp the true meaning of the verse if one acquires a sound knowledge of the facts relating to the universe. Human knowledge, however, is constantly in a state of flux. The knowledge that mankind has been able to accumulate till today is also liable to change. In olden days, the common belief derived from visual observation was that the sun revolved around the earth. Further observation and research subsequently led to the notion that the sun was stationary, whereas the planets of the solar system were revolving around the sun. However, this theory too did not endure. Subsequent observations gave rise to the belief that all stars that were considered stationary are moving in a set direction with speeds varying from 10 to 100 miles per second. As for the sun, it revolves along the entire solar system at a speed of just over 20 kilometers, approximately 12 miles per second.
وَالْقَمَرَ قَدَّرْنَاهُ مَنَازِلَ حَتَّى عَادَ كَالْعُرْجُونِ الْقَدِيمِ.
We have appointed stages for the moon till it returns in the shape of a dry old branch of palm tree. We have appointed stages for the moon till it returns in the shape of a dry old branch of palm tree.
During 1 month, the course of the moon changes every day. First, it rises as a crescent. Thereafter, it continues to grow day after day until it becomes a full moon by the 14th day. This is followed by recession until it eventually returns to its original shape of a crescent. This has been taking place for millions of years. Never has any change been noted in the phases of the moon. As a result, it is easy to work out its phase on any given day.
لَلشَّمْسُ يَنْبَغِي لَهَا أَن تُدْرِكَ الْقَمَرَ وَلَا اللَّيْلُ سَابِقُ النَّهَارِ وَكُلٌّ فِي فَلَكٍ يَسْبَحُونَ.
Neither does it lie in the sun's power to overtake the moon, nor can the night outstrip the day. All glide along, each in its own orbit. Neither does it lie in the sun's power to overtake the moon.
This is open to two equally valid meanings. A. That it is not possible for the sun to pull the moon towards itself or to collide with it by entering into the latter's orbit. B. That the sun cannot appear at the hours designated for the rise of the moon. It is simply impossible that the sun should suddenly appear on the horizon when the moon is shining at night.
Nor can the night outstrip the day.
It never happens that night sets in before the time appointed for the day comes to an end, or that it finds its way with its attendant darkness at a time earmarked for daylight.
All glide along, each in its own orbit.
Falak in Arabic denotes a planetary orbit. It is altogether different from sama, sky. The Quran says that all glide along, each in its orbit. This lays bare the following truths. A. That not only the sun and the moon, but all stars, planets, and heavenly bodies are in a state of motion. B. That each has its own orbit. C. That orbits do not move along with heavenly bodies. Rather, the heavenly bodies move along with their orbits. D. That the movement of stars is akin to the floating of an object in a liquid. These verses are not meant to furnish detailed astronomical information. Rather, they seek to press home the point that if man were to look around himself carefully, he will perceive proofs indicating God's existence and unity. On the other hand, there is no indication whatsoever of atheism or polytheism in the universe. The solar system, of which our Earth is a part, has a massive size. The sun is 300,000 times larger than the Earth, and the farthest planet of our solar system, Neptune, is at least 2,793 million miles away from the sun. However, were one to regard Pluto as the most distant planet, it lies at a massive distance of some 4,600 million miles away from the sun. Notwithstanding its gigantic proportions, our solar system is only an infinitesimal part of the galaxy that includes it, for this galaxy alone contains as many as 3,000 million suns. It takes 4 years for the light of our nearest sun to reach the Earth. It is also worth mentioning that this galaxy does not comprise the whole universe. It is just one of around 2 million spiral nebulae. The light of the nebulae which is closest to Earth takes 1 million years to reach us. As for the celestial bodies farthest from us that are visible to the eyes of our instruments, billions of years are needed for their light to reach us. Even this does not bring to light the whole universe, for so far we have managed to observe only a tiny part of God's creation. It is hard to say what will be the size of the universe that will dawn upon us in the future, when better means of observation become available. The facts regarding the universe that have come to our knowledge till now show that it is composed of the same material of which the Earth is constituted. Also, the same laws of nature are at work in the entire universe. Had this not been so, we would not have been able to fathom the workings of the universe. All this conclusively proves that the whole universe is the creation of the one true Lord who reigns supreme. The order, wisdom, and interconnectedness characterizing the numerous galaxies with countless planets revolving in them indicate beyond any shadow of doubt that this universe did not come into being of its own or as a result of some accident. Is it conceivable that there be order in the universe without there being the one who gave shape to that order? That there be wisdom without there being the wise one? That there can be design and immaculate work without there being the designer? And that there be planning without there being the planner?
وَآيَةٌ لَهُمْ أَنَّا حَمَلْنَا ذُرِّيَّتَهُمْ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْحُونَ.
Another sign for them is that we carried all their offspring in the laden vessel. Another sign for them is that we carried all their offspring in the laden vessel.
The laden vessel here denotes the Prophet Noah's ark, peace be upon him. That men were directed to board it may mean that the Prophet Noah, peace be upon him, was instructed to take his companions along with him. Those who did embark in Noah's ark are the ancestors of all future generations of human beings. For on that occasion, all the children of Adam, except these believers, were drowned in the flood. The human beings of the period that followed were all issues of those who had boarded the ark.
وَخَلَقْنَا لَهُمْ مِنْ مِثْلِهِ مَا يَرْكَبُونَ.
And then created for them other vessels like those on which they ride. And then created for them other vessels like those on which they ride.
This seems to imply that this was the first boat in the history of mankind. Before that, man had no idea how he could traverse rivers and oceans. It was God who taught Noah, peace be upon him, for the first time to make this vessel. However, when it became possible for a few souls to survive the flood, they began to build and use boats for maritime voyages.
وَإِن نَشَأْ نُغْرِقْهُمْ فَلَا صَرِيخَ لَهُمْ وَلَا هُمْ يُنْقَذُونَ.
Should we so wish, we can drown them, and there will be none to heed their cries of distress, nor will they be rescued.
إِلَّا رَحْمَةً مِنَّا وَمَتَاعًا إِلَى حِينَ.
It is only our mercy that rescues them and enables enjoyment of life for a while. It is only our mercy that rescues them and enables enjoyment of life for a while.
Some signs were mentioned in the preceding passage by way of evidence in support of monotheism. Attention is now drawn to this particular sign to make people realize that whatever control they exercise over things is thanks to the powers granted to them by God. In other words, man has not acquired these powers himself. Furthermore, it is God who instructed him in how to exercise his powers. He would not have been able to find out on his own how to utilize his faculties and powers. Man enjoys this authority only as long as God wills so. When God wills differently, man is deprived of the power to control the forces of nature. Rather, the same forces of nature make life difficult for him, and he finds himself totally helpless. God mentions sea voyages as an example to illustrate this. Had God not instructed the prophet Noah, peace be upon him, how to build the ark, the entire human race would have perished in the flood. Again, it was God who guided the believers to board the ark, as a result of which they survived and were later able to settle in various parts of the earth. The principles of boat building and thereby undertaking sea voyages enabled mankind to move around. Notwithstanding all the advancements accomplished by man in the various modes of transport, he cannot claim total mastery over the sea. To this day, God reigns supreme, and as and when he wills, ships along with their passengers are wrecked.
وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمُ اتَّقُوا مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِيكُمْ وَمَا خَلْفَكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُرْحَمُونَ.
When it is said to such people, guard yourselves against what is ahead of you and what has preceded you, that mercy be shown to you, they pay scant heed to it. When it is said to such people, guard yourselves against what is ahead of you and what has preceded you,
this was experienced by earlier nations.
وَمَا تَأْتِيهِمْ مِنْ آيَةٍ مِنْ آيَاتِ رَبِّهِمْ إِلَّا كَانُوا عَنْهَا مُعْرِضِينَ
Never does any sign of their Lord come to them, but they turn away from it. Never does any sign of their Lord come to them, but they turn away from it.
Signs also denote the verses of the Quran through which human beings are provided right counsel. Signs, however, also mean the signs that are found in the cosmic phenomena and in man's own being and in history, which can make man derive a lesson providing he is ready for it.
وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ أَنفِقُوا مِمَّا رَزَقَكُمُ اللَّهُ قَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنُطْعِمُ مَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهُ أَطْعَمَهُ إِنْ أَنْتُمْ إِلَّا فِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ
And when it is said to them, Spend in the way of Allah, out of the sustenance that Allah has provided you, the unbelievers say to the believers, Shall we feed him whom Allah would have fed had he so wished? Say, you are in evident error. Shall we feed him whom Allah would have fed had he so wished? Say, you are in evident error.
Unbelief not only causes mental blindness, but also numbs man's moral sense. As a result, such people become incapable of using sound reason in regard to God, nor do they adopt an appropriate attitude toward God's creatures. Furthermore, when such people receive good advice, they simply spurn it and have a ready explanation to justify their rejection of it. They also have no dearth of legitimizing philosophies for every doctrinal error and moral corruption of theirs. They are ever prone to flee from every act of goodness and always have some pretext to justify their attitude.
وَيَقُولُونَ مَتَى هَذَا الْوَعْدُ إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ
They say, When will this threat of resurrection come to pass? Tell us if indeed you are truthful. They say,
The other contentious issue after monotheism between the Prophet, peace be upon him, and the unbelievers was that of the hereafter. The present verses depict a terrible scene of the life to come. This is in order to impress on the unbelievers that the last day is imminent, regardless of their rejection of it. A day is bound to come when all will inexorably experience what has been destined.
When will this threat of resurrection come to pass? Tell us if indeed you are truthful.
What is meant here is not that the unbelievers were genuinely interested in knowing the exact date when the day of resurrection would arrive. Hence, if they were informed of that date, their doubts would be removed and they would feel satisfied. Far from it, for they had taken recourse to posing this kind of question in order to emphasize that the very idea of the next life was simply fanciful and that by being told that it would come, they were being subjected to a totally empty threat. Hence, in response to the unbelievers' query, when will the threat of the hereafter pass by? They are not informed of the date of its occurrence. Instead, they are jolted by the declaration that the day of resurrection is imminent, and when it does come, a mighty blast will seize them, the while they are disputing.
مَا يَنظُرُونَ إِلَّا صَيْحَةً وَاحِدَةً تَأْخُذُهُمْ وَهُمْ يَخِصِّمُونَ
The truth is that they are waiting for nothing but a mighty blast to seize them, the while they are disputing in their worldly affairs.
فَلَا يَسْتَطِيعُونَ تَوْصِيَةً وَلَا إِلَىٰ أَهْلِهِمْ يَرْجِعُونَ
And they will not even be able to make a testament, nor to return to their households. And they will not even be able to make a testament, nor to return to their households.
The last day will not approach with slow, measured steps, enabling mankind to observe it in a leisurely fashion. Rather, it will suddenly overtake people while they are engaged in their worldly pursuits. At the time of its coming, it will not occur to the people concerned that the end of the world has arrived. There will be a sudden and huge blast, and everything will come to an end. Abdullah ibn al-As and Abu Huraira narrate from the Prophet, peace be upon him, "While people are walking about the market shopping and talking in their assemblies, suddenly the trumpet will be blown. He who is engaged in buying a piece of cloth will die instantly before even laying down that piece of cloth. Likewise, someone will fill a tank to provide water for his cattle, but before the cattle drink that water, the last day will come to pass. There will be someone who will sit down to eat, but will die even before he is able to put a bite of food into his mouth."